and welcome to another edition of Fool's Daily. Today you may notice that we have a different accent, one of the American variety, which will be a little unusual, but we'll see if it'll work. My name is Dan, and with me today I have Dwight. Say hi, Dwight.
Hello, Dwight.
All right, since neither one of us have actually been on Fool's Daily before, we'll do the quick 30-second gamer histories. I'll start. I got into video games at a very early age with the NES, all the way through those systems. Then, board game-wise, I was pretty much your standard board gamer until college when I found out about Euro games such as Settlers of Catan, and that opened up a wide variety of board games. I also picked up 40K right after college, then Magic, got sucked into that, then finally ended up in Malifaux and a lot of board gaming nowadays. How about you, Dwight?
Yeah, I think it started with me with my family. We would always play fun old board games with family time. My mom's big into Yahtzee, Rummikub, Monopoly. I took an early liking to Clue and other trick-taking games like Rook. Just grew up around games, and the fun of just interacting with other people over games like that. As I got into college, I also found out about the fun of the new generation of Euro games, as you called them. And you, Dan, got me into Magic. Thanks for that.
Sorry.
It's good. I like it still, so that's a relief. But I also really like good quality board games. And so I bounce between the two. Have never gotten into the miniatures games like you have, but it's fun to talk about them.
Yeah, despite my best efforts. And me and Dwight used to live in the same zip code. And when we did, it was great. We had a bunch of friends that would get together and play board games and drink beer. It was kind of like a once-a-month thing. We'd go to somebody's house and just play board games for a night. And so, really missed that.
It was a good
time. That brings us to our topic. So as you might have figured out, we're kind of heavy into board games. So we're actually going to talk about a board game that we both really enjoy. And that board game is Seven Wonders. So Seven Wonders, what is Seven Wonders, Dwight, since you're the owner of said game?
Seven Wonders is a wonderful game where it is based around drafting cards that give you different abilities that allow you, in the flavor of the game, to build up your own empire, as it were, your own world, your own city that has different structures in it that provide you with different advantages. While at the same time your friends around the table are doing the same thing. It's themed around the seven wonders of the world, but the expansions and cards add a lot of depth beyond just the seven wonders that everyone may or may not be familiar with.
All right, so what are like some of the paths to victory, and how many players do you need to play this game?
Yeah, well, basically, it is based around earning the most victory points. And as you may have noticed, the name of the game is Seven Wonders, and the idea of seven is repeated in a lot of different ways. There are seven different types of cards in the main game, and there are seven different ways to get victory points. That might seem like a lot, or that it makes you sort of bogged down during the game and thinking about different ways to get victory points, but honestly, it's all fairly straightforward. And the fun of it is that at the end of the game, there is a little bit of doubt about who's the winner until you actually tabulate everything. Right. But which one do you want to start with? Do you want to start with the cards or the seven different victory point strategies?
Let's start with the cards. Let's keep it pretty general. Let's kind of do an overview of the cards. So what are the seven wonders that come standard with the game?
Yeah, every player, other than the cards that you draft, starts with a little board that is your wonder, and you can assign these randomly, or you can fight over them, however you choose. All right. The seven wonders are the Colossus of Rhodes, the Lighthouse of Alexandria, the Temple of Artemis, there it is, in Ephesus, the Mausoleum of Halicarnassus, the Statue of Zeus in Olympia, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, and finally, the Pyramids of Giza.
All right, so what sets these wonders apart from each other? How are they different?
Well, each wonder board that you start with has one of the different seven different resources up in the top left corner. And that provides you with that resource each turn in the game without having to draft any cards whatsoever. In addition to that, there's three different stages of your wonder that you can build through a card mechanic in the game. And each of those three stages provides you with an additional advantage that varies from board to board. So some boards will focus on military strength, which is one of the card types. Some focuses on scientific strength. And then there are also just a variety of other strategic choices to make based on whether you're on the front side of the board, which is a little more basic, or the back side of the board. So there's a lot of great replay value there in not only playing the different boards, but playing the different sides of the boards so that each game is different.
Sure. So how many players do you need to play this game, and how many players can you play up to?
Yes, the base game can play with just two players. They have a rule set that's slightly different for two players to allow you to play each other. That is slightly different. Otherwise, I think it's ideal for the drafting set in 3 through 7 players.
Sure.
And this game is nice that it goes up to 7 players, because honestly, a lot of board games you find nowadays have sort of that sweet spot of 3 to 5 or even 3 to 6. Right. And sometimes if you have invited enough friends over, then...
this often happens.
Yeah, you kind of have to split up. Whereas that is not the case. You can get all the way up to 7 players with this. If you have the expansions of, I think it's the city's expansion, that actually allows you to get all the way up to 8 players as well. And I did that recently. It was a lot of fun.
I think I was there, actually.
You were.
Back on a visit. So how long does this game take to play, and does the scale of players affect that time at all?
But, it says on the box that it's a 30-minute game. I would err a little bit higher than that, unless everyone who's playing has played it through more than once. Right. Once you get a play group that's played it several times, you can probably do 3 to 7 players in about 30 minutes. The first game, I find, any time we pull it out, usually takes a little bit longer, closer to 45, I would say.
Right, that's about where I'd put it. And it really doesn't matter how many players. It kind of plays the same speed all the time, as long as you don't have that one slow person
yeah.
in the group that takes forever to draft.
Exactly. Other than that, you're right. The play is simultaneous. Basically, everyone's doing the same thing at the same time. So there's sort of action between turns where everyone can look to see what everyone else has done. But other than that, you're not sitting there waiting for someone else to take your turn. You're just playing.
Right, so let's talk about the drafting. I mean, it's fairly similar to a Magic draft. I hate to bring up that dirty word here again, but you start, you pass right, you pass left, you pass right. So what kind of things are you drafting?
Yeah, well, like you said, there's 3 phases to the game, and or ages, I think they call it. And during the first age, you're building your board up at the very beginning, and there's a stack of cards in front of you. And like I said, there's 7 different types of cards. So there's military cards that give you military power. There's gold producing cards, something that'll give you gold. There's different, what's the word I'm looking for? Resource cards, sorry.
Resource
cards come in 2 different flavors. There's the brown raw materials or the gray manufactured goods. Blue cards are basically just straight victory points. There's a scientific route you can take that has an interesting squared mechanic where you look for 3 different scientific symbols, and the more of those you have, like, the better it gets. And then there, in the third age, there are purple cards that they call guilds, and these give you victory points based on different things that your neighbors have done and different structures you've built. But in the first age, basically you're just trying to build up a very basic starting base of raw materials. A card will have a picture of what raw material it produces, and when you draft that card, then in every turn following, your city, represented by your board and the cards around it, now produce that material. And that's useful because later on the cards start to have costs associated with them. And you can only draft a card if you can produce the cost that's on the card in the upper corner.
Right, and that's one of the sticking points that's hard to figure out when you're first new to the game, because it seems like a really boring card to draft. But the more you play it, the more you realize you need to draft those early in order to be able to do anything in stages 2 and 3.
Absolutely. You can just get locked out of a game if you aren't paying attention to your resources, or if your friends and neighbors steal them from you or don't give you what you need. It's hard to notice until about age 3, and all of a sudden you're like, wait, I don't have access to that, and I need it.
Right. So talk about the neighbor aspect of it, of the game.
Yeah, well, you sit around at a table in a circle, and like you said, you either pass left or right, and your neighbors are the persons directly next to you on your left and your right. And if anyone's farther around the table than that, they're not your neighbor, and so you're not interacting with them. Ways you can interact with your neighbors is the military function is the first one. I was describing how you can get cards that give you military strength. Basically, at the end of each of the 3 ages, you compare your total military strength to your neighbors, and if you are greater than them, then you win, and that provides you with victory points. If you're tied, you both just get 0, which is okay, but if you lose to your neighbor, then you get negative victory points. So there's a balance there with military strength in how much do I need to keep from losing, or how much do I need to win, or do I care at all? And you can just ignore military strength and probably still find another way to win. The other way you can interact with your neighbors is commerce. Basically, you can buy materials that they produce, so that you can draft a card that has a cost of those materials. I might produce wood and brick, but I don't have any gold. But my neighbor produces gold. So for every gold that he produces on his board, I can pay him 2 coins. And that's why the coins are part of the game. They sort of, well, they act like money. They lubricate the commerce of the game so that even if there's something you don't have, you can get it. I can pay my neighbor 2 coins, and then that gives me access to that gold that he produces.
Right. And the other thing, like, some of the cards you can draft are called markets, and they allow you to buy stuff from your neighbors cheaper.
Exactly.
Which your neighbors don't appreciate, but it's good for you if they have all the resources you need.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that that's understanding how the cards on your board produce resources is another sticking point for new players, because there's no actual gold being handed back and forth. There's nothing physical that's passing back and forth other than little gold tokens, or coin tokens, sorry, to show if you bought something or not. When a card is in front of you, you produce that once per turn. But there's nothing to indicate that. So you really just have to look at your own board, say, I have a symbol of a brick, that means I produce 1 brick. If you have 2 symbols, then you produce 2 brick each turn. Once new players get over that hump, I think the rest of the game is fairly straightforward. But that can be an interesting point for new players to learn.
So would you say there's like one predominant, powerful way to victory? Is there like one overarching strategy that wins every time?
I would say absolutely not. In my experience, there is a wide variety of strategies that can win, and really the one strategy that always works is paying attention to what's being given to you in the draft, always finding the most powerful thing to do, and sort of reacting to the draft environment. I mean, that's the key of any situation where you're drafting cards. You get to look at
card evaluation.
Yeah, card evaluation. You get to look at the pack of cards in front of you and say, which one of these is best for me? And it's not just comparing the cards to each other, but it's comparing the situations to each other, saying, what is my neighbor doing? What am I doing? He's going full on military, but I just don't care. And knowing which way the cards are being passed, left and right. I know one of your favorite parts of the game, Dan, is that some of the cards in age 2 and 3 are free to build.
Right.
If you have already built another structure early in the game.
Predecessor. Yeah.
Yeah.
It just feels like straight value. You don't have to use any resources. It usually is one step better than what you had, and it usually just builds all the way through all three stages. So
yeah,
I do enjoy those.
Yeah, the game designer, let's see, his name is Antoine Bauza. Back in 2010, came up with this game. I think he was really did a good job of creating interesting connections between the different cards that allow you to build one free. Sometimes one scientific card will allow you to build another scientific card for free, but sometimes it's not as straightforward. Sometimes a scientific card will allow you to buy a military card for free or draft a military card for free later in the game. So then again, it's evaluation. Are you doing both military and scientific? Is that the best card for you? Or are you only paying attention to one of those?
Right. No, that's what's really awesome about it. I mean, there's no one way to victory. Like, every game is completely different. Depending on what the board you have, too, it gives you different resources to start the game, and you have different strategies that it kind of forces you into a little bit in order to complete your board to build all three wonders.
Yeah, absolutely. There are some expansions. There's two official expansions, small boxes. One is called Leaders. They provide a leader card that represents a person that you can draft at the beginning of each age, and then that person basically grants you an ability. The second expansion is called Cities, and this provides you new routes of interaction with your neighbors and some new structures that do different things with military and scientific power. Both of these build very naturally on the core mechanics in the base game, provide new gameplay, but don't really take anything from the way you played it before. They're both fun to play with. They don't need to both, you can play with either Cities or Leaders, or you can play with both Leaders and Cities. So that's nice in that it gives you the ability to choose your own adventure there. You don't have to do it in a certain order.
Right.
And they've also done a good job of coming up with some, I know a lot of people who are gamers like to be collectors too. I know I am. And they have they have expansions that are just wonder boards. They have some really fun ones. If you can find it, there's a promotional board that is referencing the game Settlers of Catan, which I think everybody knows. And then there's also some that represent Mannequin Piss of Brussels, which is the maker's hometown and a big city of board gaming. Stonehenge, the Great Wall of China, and Abu Simbel are all other options. There's a couple cards that you can get too. There's a Stevie Wonder promo card. So those all are just fun collector's items that you don't need to play the game, but if you want to hunt down the other options available to you, they're there. Somewhere out there on the internet.
Yeah, just doing a quick Google search, it looks like this is in American dollars. For about $30 now, you can pick up Seven Wonders, and it looks like it's even sneaking into stores such as Target,
yeah,
which is pretty
absolutely.
Cool.
Absolutely. I've seen it around more and more.
And then it looks like the expansions are going for about $20 a piece. So, I mean, for $70, you can get the entire thing. For $30, you can give it a try, and if you like it, you can expand there further.
I think that's a good price, too. If you look at your average board game out there nowadays, they're usually high quality. I think Seven Wonders is really high quality in terms of production. But you're getting it for only $30, where you're often spending $45 to $50 for other games that I think are fairly similar. It's partly because the main components are just cards, so it's a little bit cheaper for them to produce, but the game doesn't seem smaller. It's a great game.
Right, and the pieces are really nice. It's really nice heavy card stock, like you're not gonna...
Yeah.
Break them. Like, you can get sleeves for the cards, so you keep those in pristine condition if you want to. Otherwise, they seem pretty durable.
Yep.
Yeah, it is a really good value. Was there anything else we have to know about this game then, Dwight?
I would say that it hits a couple different areas. If you like flavor, it's got a nice amount of storytelling flavor in terms of the fact that you're building your own city. You can pay attention. It has nice artwork on each card. And you can sort of think about how You want a chariot to go with your clay pit, because that's the combination that works for you. But if you're purely interested in mechanics of a game, and you don't really, and you don't really pay attention to the art so much as just the words, the mechanics are really deep. And you can draft it several games in a row. And it really just feels like you're learning more and more, and it's not losing anything in the additional drafts. So it's got a great balance for all different types of gamers there.
Well, excellent. I think we've about run out of time, so until next time, this has been Dan.
And this has been Dwight.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
You can contact Fools Daily on Twitter, we're at fools_daily, or via email, foolsdaily@outlook.com.